now to agenda item two. This is open public comment. Those of you that are signed up have been here before. You got 3 minutes. Nikki will let you know when it's time. I'm going to call you all four up at one time, if I may. Bruce Barnes, Dave Hedrick, Rob Crabo, and Ronald Reed. Start us off, Bruce, please.
Good morning, Commissioner and Chairman of the Game Commission. Thanks for the opportunity to talk here. My name's Bruce Barnes. I live in Vancouver, Washington, and I'm an avid hunter, but I'm really disappointed in the hunting season this year. And what I'm disappointed in, and I'm going to give you, if I got a complaint, I'm going to give you a solution. Our public lands are being taken from us for people to be able to hunt. They're turning these public lands into what's called a NAP, Natural Area of Process. I'm going to talk to the Public Lands Commissioner about it today. Took square miles of land away from me to hunt on. Plus, the Fish and Wildlife bought a huge piece of property in East Klickitat this year where only 3 muzzleloaders were allowed to hunt. To me, it's the wrong approach. It's horrible customer service, and it's cheating people out of opportunities that are buying that opportunity to be able to harvest an animal. My solution to that is this. In the state of Washington, they have got what's called a wetlands mitigation process. If you want to develop on a wetland, you pay a fee. You can develop on that wetland. That fee goes to buying another wetland, right? What we need in this state to tie public lands together so I have access and you all have access and you have access is we need a fee for anybody that develops in this state. You're going to pay a fee now to buy public lands. And that fee is not going to go to the Fish and Wildlife. It's going to go to a separate fund, not in a general fund, to tie public lands together because it's such a checkerboard process. And all these people strategically buy property, including myself, to block people out of public lands, even though I let people access through my land to go hunt the BLM land. Other people don't do it. Okay? That's one solution. The other solution is what we need to do is fix the customer service in your Fish and Wildlife. What I hear is conservation, but what we're not doing with our elk herd is conserving it. Okay? We've got a massive hoof rot problem in the state. I've read through both of your 5-year studies. It says these animals only live to 3.5 years old, but yet this year we're planning on hunting the same amount of 100 days with a diminished elk herd, right? When are we going to hunt the last elk? There's none left now. Tracks don't lie. You don't see elk anymore. I harvested one this year, but there was a conflict with the harvest, right? People are jealous. They're irritated. I'm riding a pedal assist bike into an area. It's legal to do it. People get irritated. They call the game department, and I will commend your captain of Region 5, Jeff Wickersham. He handled it extremely professional. I would ask you guys to have him come up and do public comment because the way that was handled was excellent. I mean, excellent. It's also the most underfunded group in the state Fish and Wildlife. We need more law enforcement. So those are some things, and I'd like to see the state undivided for elk hunting. I've went and got all the game pamphlets from all the western states because I took my parents on a trip this year. None of them divide their state for elk hunting. They don't penalize people that want to go hunt. And that's a penalty, because if I want to buy an out-of-state license for the east side, I'm penalized to hunt the east side if I don't draw that tag. It's going to open up more opportunities for people to hunt. Thank you for your time.
If I could, go ahead, Molly, please. Commissioner Linville.
I just had a question on the Klickitat property that you were talking about. Was that because there were only 3 muzzleloader permits issued, or how?
The Department of Natural Resources is closing down properties square miles at a time, and they're calling them a NAP, a natural area process. This land is grassland or rocky canyons. There's no reason to close it down. And so with a limited access in East Klickitat to public lands, now it's lessening and lessening. I had 4 people that I was hunting with this year that said they're never hunting this state again. They're done. They're not buying hunting licenses.
So thank you for that. You gave a very specific number. You said 3 muzzleloaders.
3 muzzleloader tags for an area in East Klickitat where the Fish and Wildlife have gone in and bought, I believe it was 8,000 acres, it may have been 5, from a timber company and only allowed 3 people to hunt that whole area.
Through a permit.
Through a permit process. But when you look at your game pamphlet, it's very confusing because it doesn't say that. So the people drive all the way out there to go hunt, and your law enforcement is there telling them they can't hunt. And they're going, what? So we drive all the way from Vancouver, Washington, which is 2.5 hours to go hunt during muzzleload season. People take days off of work. And now where do you go hunt? And then you go to a different public land on your Onyx maps, and it says, this is closed, no public access, no shooting. It wasn't that way the last year. Then I called the DNR, and guess what? I still haven't got a call back. So that's why I'm here today.
Thank you for that clarification.
Thank you.
Bruce, thank you very much for your testimony. Appreciate it. Director, what he's brought up, I think, to me and perhaps the other commissioners, is somewhat new. I haven't heard this before. Could we, in the near future, get a briefing on what the new status quo is?
Regarding the DNR process?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll have to get some.
Yeah.
And if I may, the other thing that they're doing this next year is they're going to turn over the Convoy Wildlife Refuge to the Yakima Indians, which has been a refuge for animals to escape. At least that's the talk. Okay. I would say absolutely no way, because that's the animals' escape from the hunters, and it's kept that herd healthy and viable for other hunters to be able to hunt, because there is a lot of open timberland to be able to hunt those animals. And I got to tell you, I took a little Indian gal hunting this year that refused to hunt with the Yakima Indians because, you know why? She says, all my relatives are poachers. I don't want to hunt that way. She went and got her hunter license, and she shot a really nice four-point buck, and I was proud of her. So that's what we need to be doing as hunters, is encouraging people to do the right thing, not hunt during muzzleload with an AR-15, which that's what was going on. So appreciate your time.
Thank you for the comment. We will get up to speed on this in the near future. Thank you, Bruce. Dave Hedrick, please.
So I'm a Ferry County resident, and I'm the manager of the Ferry Conservation District, but I'm here as an individual today. In 2012, I was given the opportunity to join the Board of Conservation Northwest. It was a chance to work on the urban-rural divide and an opportunity to become incredibly unpopular in a place where my family's owned a ranch since the late 1800s. About 2 months after I took that position, wolves started eating cows in the wedge. And that was about 20 minutes from my house. And suddenly, Conservation Northwest focus became wolves because that's where the action was. There was a consulting firm that came in for fundraising and pitched a program called the Hero's Narrative. It was basically a way to profit from conflict. For a hero, there has to be a villain, and the villain turned out to be ranchers, and I believe it's been very lucrative for them. I think other groups have taken it to a different level. You know, we all need to be clear. There are people with wolves that are making money, and there are people with wolves that are losing money. When the governor basically regurgitated the talking points of a national environmental group, he left out the fact that Northeast ranchers have helped get wolves to recovery times 3 and complete saturation. He probably didn't know it, or if he did, he didn't care. He perpetuated the narrative and got paid, because this all seems to be about money. And when the director responded, he had the chance to clear that up and talk about the fact that the ranchers have help get the population to where it is. And basically what happens is the ranchers got thrown under the bus, particularly the ones in my county. It seemed like the letter was basically just a pitch to plug the hole for WDFW's budget, and that was about it. You know, clearly that the ranchers in Northeast Washington are not making money on wolves. And certainly, you know, this agency doesn't seem to care about that. If you did, you know, you wouldn't be making policies that maybe you can't pay for, but somebody's going to pay for them, and that's going to be the ranchers up there and the people in Northeast Washington. In my opinion, this has never been about a plan. It's certainly not about science. It's about conflict and fear and money and the power that generates. It's all about the money. And it's an age-old story, the hero and the villain. And we all know how that story goes. The hero wins, the villain loses. End of story.
Thank you, Chair Carpenter and members of the Commission. I'm Rob Crable. I'm a Northwest representative with Defenders of Wildlife. And this morning I'm going to mostly talk to you about the 25-year strategic plan that the department's undergoing. Before I get to that, though, I passed out to the front desk a copy of a literature review from my colleague Zoe Hanley. Commissioner Anderson, I believe that you had requested her literature review on wolf-livestock interactions that she completed, so I printed that off with her contact info and provided it to all members of the Commission for your information, and if you have any follow-up questions, she's the one to talk to. But today I'm here to talk about the strategic plan that the department is undergoing. We really appreciate Director Sue Swind and the department for looking out 25 years. We think that is a very appropriate timeline to be thinking of. And given the threats that face our state and our wildlife from growing urban development and climate change, we think that this is extremely timely. The main things that we've been asking the department to look at in this 25-year review fall into four main buckets. The first is to advance goals related to diversity, equity, inclusion, and justice within the department, both in terms of the services and opportunities that the department provides, but also in changing the culture and diversity of department staff themselves. We also are asking that the department place a greater emphasis on climate change adaptation and mitigation. There's a lot of unfortunate impacts that climate change will cause to this state, and it will impact our wildlife. And as a department, we think that we should be focusing more on how to allow those animals to naturally adapt to those changing climates. We wanted to see a greater emphasis on recovering keystone species, both endangered and non-endangered keystone species. One of my favorites is beavers. I think that they're amazing ecosystem engineers, and the more that we can do to invest in those keystone species and recover them to ecologically relevant levels, the more that they'll do some of the hard conservation work for us, and they do it for free. And then lastly, we really are emphasizing that the state as a whole needs to be refinancing the way that we pay for conservation. This is something that Director Sue Swind talks about a lot. Defenders of Wildlife believes that more of the department's budget should be coming from the general fund, and it should be coming on a permanent basis. We support a lot of the efforts that the department's doing to increase fees and revenue through licenses, but given the trends with hunting and fishing, we think that there needs to be a greater investment from the state in its general funds. So those are the four sort of main areas that we'd like to see the department move in with its 25-year plan. I've included the letter that we sent to Director Sue Swind and Jeff Davis with all of you as well, along with my business card if you have any questions. And then lastly, just a quick update for you on some of the work that we are doing with the department on bear education and outreach. I'm very excited that we are continuing our partnership in the Selkirks region with the Kalispell Natural Resources Department. Commissioner Thornburg was at one of our events last year. And we've been able to provide bear spray and bear awareness trainings to folks out there. And this year, we are pursuing a new project with the help of the department and the Metau Valley Conservancy to provide bear-resistant trash cans to folks who live in the Metau Valley to reduce some of the conflicts that those folks are experiencing with black bears. So we really appreciate that partnership and appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you for your testimony, Rob. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Thornburg.
Thanks, Rod. Thanks, Dave, as well. It struck me that your testimonies kind of overlapped, especially when you brought up keystone species. Thanks so much. Our issue is really a resource issue, as you're talking about, and we have to devote a lot of resources to certain high-profile issues and don't have the resources we need for biodiversity and ensuring that continues, and that relates to keystone species. I understand that we're soon going to be looking at the Mazama gopher, a keystone species. I love talking about burrowing mammals, you know, and nobody pays any attention to them. They're unpopular, but, you know, we talk about soil health and what and how it relates to climate change. And you know, this is what we do that is so important to our constituents. And so, you know, thanks to both of you, because I think you have really hit on what is important about our work and what our needs are in terms of being able to do those kinds of things. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Thurman. Commissioner Graybill?
I want one of those bear-proof trash cans.
Well, you have to live in the Metau Valley to get those right now, so.
Well, darn.
But I have a few other suggestions for you that we can talk about later.
Well,
so.
I've employed all of those, mm-hmm. and I do not, I freeze my garbage, you know, to try to keep, and I don't really have problems, but my neighbors do.
Yes.
And so this next year, in the spring, I'm going to commit to, they're available through my service, Waste Management. I think it's only a $3 a month fee.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to get one and show it off and try to encourage my neighbors to do the same.
Excellent. And I would encourage you to reach out with Rich Bousselet with the department. He's a bear and cougar specialist. And he has, he's talked to me quite a bit about some of the challenges in Leavenworth.
Oh.
And we're hoping that through the partnership that we have with the department and Metau Valley WasteWise and a few other local partners, that we can use this as a model to take to other communities. So yeah. Leavenworth's on my radar, Commissioner.
Terrific. Thank you.
Commissioner Linville.
I also kind of echo what Kim said, and thank you both, Dave. That was excellent. I was a little, like, I didn't ask you any questions because I was like, you kind of said everything to be said, so I just want to clarify that. I would ask, I'm very interested in who pays the freight for when we are moving from a non-consumptive use, sorry for the word use, of our enjoyment of our wildlife. So moving away, you know, when we have 90% of the population not hunting and fishing. So what can we tell our folks when we go back home? What are we asking them to do to get the governor to delve into the general fund? What, you know, are there things that folks can do to facilitate that?
That is an excellent question, Commissioner. I always encourage people to sign up for our email lists.
People might not be as interested in
it. I completely understand. But I also think that there is a growing recognition among state legislators and in the governor's office that a lot of the wildlife and habitat issues that we are dealing with have been chronically underfunded for years. It's not necessarily a new narrative to this state, but I think that it has been really highlighted, and it's something that we highlight quite a bit when we talk about southern resident orcas and the salmon crisis. That's something that's really captured, especially over here on the west side, the attention, although I know plenty east siders who love orcas and salmon as well. So I think that just highlighting some of those really critical moments and really emphasizing that the reason that these animals are slipping away is not because the challenges are hard to address, it's because we don't have the funds to address those challenges. And there's so much that we can do with habitat restoration, with culvert replacement, things that people agree on. There's a lot of things that we still disagree on, but there's so much that we could do if we just had the funding dedicated to it. And I think that that message needs to be sent loud and clear to the governor and to the state legislature.
I would wholeheartedly agree with that, and I'm headed up the hill, you know, for the rest of the day to talk to both East Side and West Side legislators about this, because it's so important. And I think, you know, this one of the frustrating things with wolves is everything else gets left in the ditch, and so how do we keep these ranchers on the landscape who are providing this habitat that's so important for the species you're talking about,
Mr. Thurman?
I would just make a cautionary note. Yesterday at the Big Tent Committee, we heard from a rural landowner and commercial fisherman about sort of top-down approaches to habitat restoration and how how that can be harmful to landowners. And so I just want to make a pitch for let's do it ground up and make sure that our rural communities have a voice in these activities that we undertake.
Probably thought we weren't going to get to you.
Oh, I was confident you would.
Ronald Reed from Spokane.
Okay. Good morning, directors and commissioners, and thanks for the opportunity to be here and comment. I sent an email to the Wolf Committee earlier this week, and Commissioner Thorburn is passing that along. I brought printouts of it, and I also added a section on why I, as a private citizen, am strongly advocating on behalf of wolves. And I was fortunate enough to have a wolf dog that I had for 16 years, and he was an amazing animal. I'm not blind to the issues with wolves and livestock in eastern Washington, completely aware, but I think a lot of things are happening that could be changed that would alleviate a lot of the conflict. I'm not going to go through the thing. I just wanted that for you guys to read so you can hear a little bit about what wolves are like close up. My first concern, I have a list of concerns and solutions that we deem potentially viable. The first is, I've been to 3 WAG meetings, and the makeup of the WAG is such that it doesn't represent the Washington State public, and I think that's a problem. There's one gentleman on that committee who I went to his Facebook page a couple days ago to see what his organization was all about, and he had a post there about how much fun it is to kill predators and what kind of gun works best, and he had a few things like that on there. And this is a guy who's advising all of you on how to manage our endangered wildlife. I see that as a pretty big problem. Another issue that I have is with the Diamond M ranching operations in Northeast Washington. They are responsible for 84% of the wolves that have been taken since 2012. 3 packs in the very same area, and 8 of them were removed just this last summer, literally hours before an injunction to stop it from happening. I don't know if that was on purpose or if it was bad timing, but it sure created some anxiety for me and a lot of people who I call my colleagues. I'm out of time already. Okay. All right. Well, you have all of this. It's basically what I wanted to talk about.
Commissioner Baker.
Just wanted to comment that it's we would be hard pressed to put together a panel that kind of showcases the different views on endangered species and wolves in particular, with each one of you having coming here talking to us, being completely respectful and appropriate of each other, and yet having sometimes divergent, sometimes opposing, and sometimes you've agreed on these things. My guess is, I think this is obvious, but your different positions on this are replicated here, because these are not problems that have an easy or right answer. We have put together a new committee. Commissioner Thorburn is the chair of it. To try to give some extra emphasis to this, I know it's a hassle to come and participate, but I want to let you know that we are investing a ton of our own time to try to figure this out. where the motives and objectives are not money. That's certainly not why I'm here. And I think I speak for everybody that on this issue, that's just not it. But we do need to understand that there are people who think that there are motivations that are different than what we come with, and hear why. And so I invite you all. And if you can't come, feel free to email, call. I'll sure talk to you, and I bet you everybody else on this panel would. So I just appreciate all three of you, or actually all four of you, this morning. Thank you.
Commissioner Graybill?
I just wanted to mention, again, getting back to the composition of the WAG, you think it's inappropriate for someone that actually hunts predators to be on the WAG. Diversity is the reason we have these panels. And also, I have a huge respect for coyotes. I've lived with them forever in eastern Washington. I've always considered them a much better hunter than I am. But at the same time, they need to be managed and controlled. And there are many ranchers that I know that welcome hunters onto their property because to protect their, particularly right now during calving season and things like that. So I don't agree with you that if a person has a different opinion than yours, they shouldn't appear on this panel.
Can I respond?
Go ahead. You can respond, sir.
I would agree. You know, you have to have a diverse group to study this. The WAG is definitely weighted heavy with agricultural people and hunters. I mean, and it's not, I'm fine with people hunting. I don't hunt myself, and I never have, but I certainly don't have a problem with that. It was more, and I've heard Dave talk at the WAG meetings, and I don't want to get into it, but it's more the level of approach, I guess, than just being a hunter. I mean, there's other hunters that speak on the WAG, and they seem reasoned and people who have respect for the wildlife. My biggest problem is really with one specific ranch that is not following the protocol rules, and we continue to take out wolves for them. And that is a huge problem as far as I'm concerned. The OPT pack has been removed 3 times for the same guy in the same place. It's not making any difference. You know, it's going to repopulate again. And what are we going to do then? Are we just going to take them out again?
Go ahead, wrap up.
I have some solutions in my paper that I would like you to consider, and I'd be happy to follow up with any of you that are interested. So thanks again for the time.
Thank you, gentlemen, all three of you, for coming. Okay, we're right on time somehow. Okay.